the project aspect of it all and just being able to build things. I really do find myself enjoying trying to, put these puzzles together and make them successful.
Hello, and thank you for joining us today on the Gentle Art of Crushing It show, where we focus on learning and sharing with our listeners all there is to know about how to create success in our lives. This show stands on the shoulders of giants. Our mission is to empower and inspire our listeners to create the life of their dreams whilst having a blast in the process. Let's celebrate life together. Welcome to the show.
Well, hello. Welcome to today's episode of the Gentle Art of Crushing It podcast. My name is Derek Felch. I'm a real estate investor who focuses on single-family homes and short-term rentals. In addition, I work with a team who manages short and midterm rentals around the country. If you're new to this podcast, I'm also one of five hosts who bring you conversations three times a week. We cover a variety of topics around real estate, business, and personal development. And we release a new episode every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Our purpose in this podcast is to help others succeed in whatever target they're aiming at. Each of us is committed to finding the best and the brightest people we can to share their stories and the lessons they've learned so far on their journey. And let's be honest, there are a ton of podcasts to choose from. And so we appreciate you. I appreciate you checking ours out. And if you like what you hear, and honestly, even if you don't like what you hear, could you be sure to hit that like or subscribe button and leave a review on whatever platform you're hearing us on? We want these conversations to be heard by more people, and that is one of the best ways to make sure that happens. Now, today's episode is going to be a bit different. There are plenty of opportunities to listen to people talk about what they've accomplished and achieved and lots of podcasts. And oftentimes I find it can come across very almost neat and tidy, like every problem that ever arose that they was solved and the lessons were learned and they moved on. I don't think anyone would say that they were trying to say it was just easy. I think though, with an interview format and condensed time, those constraints it brings, that sometimes can the relatable details get left out. And we can find ourselves discouraged or like, well, it worked for them, but not for me. So I thought it would be interesting to find out what would happen if we interviewed someone at the start of their journey. They have an opportunity, but they're not sure how to take it down. And also, they're not sure how the story will end. I mean, isn't that how life really plays out? And so today I'm joined by Zachary Andrig. Zach is a property manager who's early in his real estate investing career. He is in the midst of trying to purchase his first portfolio deal that will include a 40-plus unit apartment complex, several single-family homes, and some rehab projects. And it's an opportunity that he has been working on for almost 2 years so far, just to get to the point of being able to buy it. And I want to encourage you to listen to the whole conversation and see if there's anything that resonates with you as you consider the dreams and the ideas and the goals that you have that are maybe taking too long or much longer than you thought they would or hoped. Or maybe you have some ideas and goals that almost seem impossible. I'm hoping that you will find value in this conversation. So with that, let's bring in Zach. Well, Zach, I know you. Of all the people I've interviewed, which is really like 12 people, I know you the best, and I don't know you super well, but like, what would you want people to know about you before we kind of get into chatting a little bit?
Oh man.
Who is Zach? And how do you pronounce your last name, Zach?
Andrig. I'm not sure.
Okay. That's how I was going to pronounce it.
But Andrig. So,
yeah. Wow.
Who is Zach? Starting out with the deep questions.
That's right. Yeah. This is just part therapy, part interview, whatever you need. We'll talk about it.
Oh, perfect. I needed some. From Lawrence, Kansas. So from Lawrence, Kansas, same town Derek lives in as well. I grew up swimming a lot. I went to college and got a biology degree in Colorado, bounced around a bit, did a bunch of random odd jobs for quite a long time, about 8 years or so. I guess I was doing some all kinds of different jobs. I worked in a plant nursery. I did worked at a bank because I thought I was going to learn a whole bunch about loans. turns out I was just a teller for like 2 years. I went and did 2 years of wildland firefighting, had a blast doing that, learned all kinds of things about myself and skills. Did carpentry work for a couple of years. And then I started following a guy around because I wanted to learn more about real estate investing and how to be a landlord and how to manage properties. And that's sort of how I came to this position I'm in now.
Wow. So biology, I did not know that. Why biology?
Yeah.
What the heck?
I don't know. In hindsight, you know, I don't know.
What were you hoping to do? Like, what were you going to do with it?
Well, so I was just really interested in biology. I always thought, well, if this doesn't work out, I would like to be a doctor or something like that. So I could always go the pre-med route. That'd be interesting. But if all else, you know, at least I'll learn a lot of stuff that I enjoy. So I really just thoroughly enjoyed going to my biology classes. It just happened to be when I graduated, people started asking me what I'm going to do with my biology degree. That's when I came to the realization I may have made a mistake, but I loved learning about biology. I actually had an internship where I grew cannabis in a big greenhouse. That wasn't necessarily the plan when I got out of school.
Now the truth comes out.
Yep. But I was in Colorado.
Okay. I see. So, it's all coming together.
So that was really cool. And I love doing that. I still have a pretty good green thumb. So I love the natural world and learning about natural sciences. So that stuff always intrigued me. So that's why I got a biology degree.
That's really fascinating. I did not know that about you. So you went from biology. So I met you, man, it's almost been 3 years now.
Yeah.
We started hosting a real estate meetup here in town. You were like one of the first people to show up because the first month no one showed up. So, and you were maybe the second month you rolled into town and, or rolled into our meetup and you had this exciting business idea. So I don't know. You and I have talked, you are my most faithful podcast listener which might mean you're my only podcast listener a couple times, but, and you know, we've talked a lot about in a podcast format, you know, people, it can sometimes sound so quick. Like you interview someone that's like, hey, I started here and then I did this and feels like there's pieces missing out. And that's why I wanted to chat with you, but like what, I mean, so you're in a biology degree hoping to become the marijuana kingpin.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
what got you interested in real estate? Or do you come from a real estate background, family in real estate? Like what even piqued that interest?
Sure. So I think I was always interested in being able to make a good living for myself and a future family. I just didn't quite know how to do that with my biology degree. You know, I kind of just envisioned getting a job out of college and sort of moving up the ranks, you know, typical work scenario that a lot of people do, which is totally cool. But I just didn't think that fit me and my personality very well. I love to learn things and continually grow, and even, you know, change up my situation every couple of years and learn something totally different. So I always wanted to be, I never envisioned myself, I guess, working a job for 40 years, because there's so much to learn out there and I wanted to learn it all. So I guess that's where I started down this path of, well, how do I do that? How do I make myself, you know, financially stable, where I don't have to rely on a 9-to-5. And so real estate was always circulating in the back of my podcasts that I would listen to. Bigger Pockets would pop up every once in a while and I listened to those. And so it kind of just grew on me. So while I was doing wildland firefighting, I'd come back to Lawrence in the winters and do the carpentry work that I was doing at the time. And I would live with my brother. But I really wanted to get a house and start a house hack because I was gone half the summer or the majority of the summer. And then I was here for the winter. So I thought, well, this is a perfect opportunity to be able to do a house hack So I was able to do that after my first year of doing Wildland Fire. I saved up some money. I probably saved up, you know, 10 or 15 grand. And I'm pretty positive that was the most money I've ever had in my bank account. At that point in time, I was, I don't know, 26 or so. And my parents, I was lucky enough to have some parents that have some incredibly good credit. They're both, you know, they've both been in their careers for a very long time and they're really good at saving. We grew up, you know, doing just fine. We're not taking trips to Hawaii every year, but we had more than we needed. So that's kind of the situation I grew up in. And I guess, you know, if I can digress a little bit, always seeing them do that just made me think, you know, I don't know if I want to, have the restrictions of a 9-to-5. You know, I think I'd just work better with a lot more flexible of a schedule. So that's how I was intrigued in getting into the real estate. So I got this house hack going. I got my parents to co-sign with me. So I used their credit. I used my money for the down payment and I got into this house that had a detached basement entrance. So I purchased this house for, I don't know, $130 here in Lawrence, Kansas. And it was wonderful. I lived in the basement. I refinished the basement pretty much. I put new floors in. There was a little kitchen in the basement. I spruced it up. I made the countertops and made the drawers for it. And yeah, it was really fun making that my home. And I rented the first floor out and she covered the mortgage and I paid for the utilities. So it worked perfect. And then when I was gone in the summers, you know, she's kept the house up and it really worked out well. So that was kind of how I got into the real estate game. And that's around the same time, I think, when I met you, Derek, when I started going to the Bigger Pockets meetups is when I was getting into that house. I don't know if you remember that one, but that's about the time we met.
Yeah. So, I mean, you were just, so were you, I mean, when you trying to picture this house, like you're just living in basically her basement. Like, did you come up? I mean, or was it like two separate units kind of?
Yeah. I was a little troll in the basement. I had two windows in the whole basement, which was terrible. I love light and I have so many plants because I have this biology degree and I had two windows. So my windows were just covered in plants and there was hardly any light getting into this dungeon of a basement, but it worked really well. Yeah. Wow. So I lived in the basement, detached entrance. And I had a single mom upstairs and she had a little kid. So it worked perfect for them and it was a perfect situation for me as well. So that was kind of the first house I got into.
I like the theory of the idea of house hacking and having someone else live, you know, in your basement or above you. But A, I know my wife, I'd be a single Derek very fast. But I don't know that I would really like if there wasn't like maybe I mean, I wouldn't have a problem living in a duplex where there's like defined walls of separation. But being in a house that. Like, so she could basically pop down in the basement if she needed something or
no, you could pop no, there was upstairs. No access.
Is it like, there no, was no it was access. More separate. Okay.
Yeah. No access to the basement.
Then I feel okay.
But it got a little close, too close for comfort sometimes as in like, you know, I heard almost everything they were doing upstairs. She, at one point took up jump roping as an exercise at very early in the morning. she had a treadmill up there. So that was an experience. I was really getting the full house hacking experience, but and that kind of led me to, I eventually got into another house that I purchased. So I came back my second year from doing fire rather than fire. And I didn't quite think I wanted to keep doing fire because I loved it. It was incredible. Great experience. But I kept thinking, you know, I would love to do this job, but it's hard because it's seasonal. And so I have to keep coming back home on the winters and trying to find work. And it's kind of awkward to start a job and then leave again. So if I could get more rentals going and then, you know, have this money kind of churning in the background while I go out and work all summer, and then I can come back in the winter and work on these houses, well, that'd be kind of an ideal situation. For single Zach. So I found another duplex. This was not a true duplex, but it was an older home in Lawrence, kind of by KU, pretty close to the bars in KU. And this gentleman was open to seller financing. I found this guy on Facebook, and I think the reason no one else really found it was because the house was listed where his personal residence is and not where the actual house that he was selling is. So I was just cruising around on Facebook Marketplace and found that for sale ad. So I rung him up and I met up with him, and I proposed the seller financing deal because at this point I didn't have another big chunk of money from fire. I probably had 10 grand again or so, but it wasn't going to be enough to buy this house because it needed quite a lot of work in it as well. And I knew I wasn't going to ask my parents to co-sign again. So I was on my own for this one. So I proposed the seller financing situation, which he was open to. So I think the house was listed for 220. This was 2020, I think. I talked him down to 200. If I could make interest only payments, and I think there's a 5-year balloon on it, and I put $10,000 down. So I owe 190. I think I pay about 850 bucks a month interest only payments. And, that was my second house that I purchased. So I kind of hit the ground running with that. I took a lot of the carpentry skills that I had learned previously from that job. And I gutted the entire upstairs. I had just enough rope from the carpentry job to hang myself trying to do this whole job by myself. So it was quite the experience. Quite the experience.
Wow. And you still have that one, right?
Yes, correct. So you I ended up gutting the whole...
Okay.
I gutted the whole upstairs, and I redid the whole upstairs practically by myself. Short of doing electrical and plumbing. But man, it was some long, long days up there. It took me several months to redo the whole upstairs. The whole time I was doing the upstairs, I let some guy stay in the first floor and his kids. And it was not a great situation. They had two massive dogs, and the guy living there was either dealing drugs or doing drugs. And it was, always a situation when it came to rent. And it was a firsthand experience on why you should vet people before you rent to them. So he was living downstairs. I redid the whole upstairs. He moved on after I finished the upstairs. It was not working. He hadn't paid me in a couple months. So he moved out. I got the upstairs rented, and I started working on the downstairs. So I gutted a little bit of the downstairs, just the kitchen area, and redid the whole kitchen, made it nice. And then around that time, I actually sold my house hack that I was living in. The market was just right. COVID had happened, maybe a year prior, and the house that I was in had just skyrocketed in value. It didn't make any sense to rent it anymore. And I knew it would be an issue trying to find someone that would live in the basement and deal with a tenant upstairs with, the knowledge I knew from how noisy it could be. So I figured it was my time to cash some chips in and use that money to help pay for this renovation that I was doing. Cause at the time I was taking out some credit card debt that I was uncomfortable with. I was really scraping by month to month. It was not a great situation. I was not playing it smart, but I was getting it done, and I was doing it, and I was learning a ton. So I sold my house hack duplex, took a lot of that money and paid off a lot of the debt I had accrued when I was redoing the inside of this other older duplex. So I got that fully rented out, and I'm glad I'm done with that. I have my weekends back, so it's nice.
Yeah, that's cool. Whoever told you to sell your personal residence, that must have been a really smart, talented
person. I can't remember really who told me that, maybe someday we'll get
Well, we'll work on that. Something. We'll work on that through our conversation. Yeah, it might come back to you. So, all right. So you've got a duplex. So when I met you the first time, you told me like some of the things, if I remember right, and I read some statistic lately about how a lot of our memories are actually false memories, which was really encouraging because now my overthinking mind wonders what memories I have are false and real. But you were like scouring, you were scouring like Craigslist, and you mentioned Facebook Marketplace. You would, if I remember right, and you can correct it, or if it sounds good, we can go with it. But
sure,
you would call like people that had properties for rent. You were looking for people who owned a bunch of properties, and then you just tried to like get to know them, right? Was that your, I mean, there's the strategy no one's written a book on.
Yeah.
Like, I'm Zach and I need friends. And so do you need a friend? I will come help you. So, but what made you think like, what, like, where did you come up with that idea? Cause the wise guy that helped you with the one, I didn't have that idea. So what, where'd you come up with that?
Yeah. I wish I could claim that I came up with that idea, but I don't think I really did. I think I just fell into it. I was starting to look again for the next rental. I wanted to start looking again for the next project. And I kept finding people that were, you know, listing their houses for sale. And I'd call them and see if I could get some more information. And there was a couple people that I was kind of getting, I wouldn't say close with, but you know, they'd answer my calls and maybe I'd call them once a week or once every other week and just ask them how things were going, what they were working on, you know, kind of just seeing what their jobs were and how they were making it work with their rentals. Cause every time I found anything for rent or for sale, I would look it up then on the county appraisal website. And then I would see if the mailing address was a different address than the house, then the owner did not live in the house. So then I would look up the owner's address and the owner's name, and then I would see how much property the owner had or didn't have. So that's kind of how I would look around for people that had a decent amount of rentals. Sort of a, you know, a different way than a lot of people might do it. I wasn't paying for leads or anything like that. I was just, you know, typing people's names in, seeing what popped up, and just continually clicking around on the GIS map on the tax appraiser's website. So I was doing that for quite some time. I found a prop. I was, you know, driving for dollars, all that stuff, writing the address down, trying to find the owner. And then one day I found a house that I'd been looking at for a while and was always kind of nervous to call. You know, it's kind of like jumping off a platform at the pool. You know, it's like the one above the high dive. You're scared to do it the first time, but once you do it, then it's like, all right, that wasn't too bad. I can do it again. Same way with me and cold calling people. So, you know, if I'm in the rhythm of cold calling people, I could do it, but I haven't cold called someone in a couple months. So I'd be a little nervous to do it right now. But so I got this guy on the phone and he had owned this house that was actually vacant at the time. And it looked pretty derelict, honestly. I got this family friend who was doing a lot of real estate at the time. And, you know, I was hoping that he would back me and we could purchase this property that had a lot next to it, an open lot next to it, right in downtown Lawrence. I thought, man, this is going to be a great deal. I could do the, you know, the rehab on the project. I already got one under my belt, so I kind of know what I'm doing. So, you know, maybe this is going to be the next one. And it ended up not working out. I was never able to purchase it from him. We lowballed him too low, I guess. but
yeah,
the owner turned out to be a pretty interesting guy. And his name is James. And I just kind of, again, like I did with the other owners, kept calling in, calling back, checking in and seeing what they were up to. And he would always tell me all the things that were going on in his life and, you know, all the crazy stories he was having and the tenant interactions he was having. And so I just kept calling back and he eventually invited me to come do pest control with him. So once a month he would do pest control on all of his properties. And that's kind of how he gets his foot in the door and checks in on things and makes sure everything is going well in all of his properties. So I'd follow him around on pest control day. That was very interesting. He has quite a few units, about 98 doors. So it was a little exhausting the first couple of times. I was not used to that. It was overwhelming, you know, all the different addresses and tenants and just seeing them all face to face. And so that's kind of how I met this guy, James, and how I slowly started to learn, you know, how to be a landlord, I suppose. And so that's how I met the guy that has turned into be a mentor for me, and has opened up some good opportunities for me as well. So I ended up working for James, long story short. I've worked for him for about 2 years now. I help him manage all of his properties. And like I said, we got about 98 doors. We do predominantly low income housing. So we do, you know, Section 8, we deal with HUD all the time. We deal with a mental health organization in town called Burt Nash. We deal with them quite heavily. Catholic Charities. There's a handful of charities in Lawrence that we deal with. So it's been quite a interesting ride. I think if I were to be thrown into another property management role at a typical property management job site, it would be a train wreck, or maybe it'd be really nice. I don't know.
Really?
But I've had quite an interesting, quite an interesting experience with property management. So
that's funny. I've joked with you outside of this conversation that I would like to have a monthly segment of Zach's craziest tenant story. Cause I know you have cause you deal with some tenants that a lot of landlords probably would not deal with, but clearly he really wants to help people have houses. So you're working. I mean, it paid off. I mean, that's what I've always found admirable about you, or one of the things, is that you just kind of keep scrapping around without, you know, spending a lot of money, without spending a lot of resources. You just kind of keep bugging people about their properties. And I mean, you've had some opportunities that haven't worked out, but all come from, I remember you tell me, again, I don't want to tell your stories for you, but I believe that one guy you were trying to buy his property, so you waited. He did everything himself. He was an older gentleman, and you like went over to help him shovel snow, or like that was your in to try to hang out with him and have another point of contact with him, was to shovel snow with him because he did that himself for his units. Is that right? Am I telling that story right, or is that a false memory?
Yeah.
And I just...
No, that's right.
I don't know that a lot of people would do that.
A couple people. No, I don't think so. There's still a couple people that, you know, it's kind of a bummer because this past winter, it didn't snow really any in Lawrence. So I didn't get to go see them. But that's kind of my foot in the door. You know, I stick around, and I know that a lot of these older people that have property that, you know, they do real estate investing a lot differently than I think our generation of real estate investors does it. I think, you know, the internet has heavily impacted, and podcasts have heavily impacted people's thoughts on how they should be a real estate investor. It's a much more passive and I don't know, I want to say flashy, but people really want to take a back seat, I guess. They don't want to be shoveling snow every day. But I find that a lot of this older generation, you know, they're proud to be a landlord, and that's who they are. And they want to be hands-on every single day with their property. And, so, you know, by showing up and helping them do things on their properties, and I might not even ask if they're going to sell or interested in selling. But they see that I'm there, and they see that I'm around, and that I'm helpful, and that, I just like to think that, you know, someday if they ever did decide to sell, that they would think of me in that process. So that's a long-term play that I still do. And if it doesn't work out, you know, at least I was still being helpful for somebody. So it'll all work out.
So do you think that, you know, that's an interesting thing that you mentioned about the older generation, pretty much the baby boomer generation. Do you think they looked at landlording as, or property ownership as like, that's just their job, that's their career. And so do you think that's how they approach it in the ones you've talked to, or Or are they just, some people, are they just too cheap to pay a property manager? And, or where do you think that, I mean, what do you think drives them?
You know, I'm not sure. I think it's interesting. I mean, a lot of these guys were, I haven't met too many, you know, old school lady real estate investors, but a lot of the guys I've met, they all seem to get in around the 60s and 70s and maybe into the 80s. And, you know, the way they were doing it at the time was very unique. You know, interest rates were incredibly high, even double what they are today, at least. And so they were coming into the market much differently than, you know, the current generation is coming into the market, in my opinion. And I think that maybe they had to be a little more hands-on potentially in the past. I don't know how big, you know, property management companies were in the 60s or 70s, but I can't imagine they are what they are like right now. So yeah, I think they just wanted to be more involved. And I think, you know, when, I don't know, it kind of maybe goes along the lines of, nowadays it's more typical for people to bounce around in careers and try different things. And, you know, a generation that's sort of retiring now, they might have just done one position for their whole career and not bounced around as much. But I think, you know, having access to the internet really allows people to diversify their career a lot more, and that opens up a lot more opportunities. So I think they just, you know, it was a whole different perspective in my mind when they were getting into it. I don't think they were looking to sip Mai Tais on the beach in the 60s after they bought a couple houses. You know, I just think it was a different climate back then. And a lot of those guys, since they've held on to it for so long, you know, it's kind of what they know now, and they might not want to let go of it as much anymore. But I don't know. I think that's just, what do you think about that, Derek? That's kind of my perspective on it, but.
No, that makes sense. You know, I hadn't really thought about the fact that, you know, like when those guys got started, there was really one way, two ways to collect rent. They mailed it to you or they brought it to you. Like there wasn't, we weren't, you know, using an app to submit rent. And, you know, you were keeping books on a ledger, you know, on those beautiful multi-column pads that I remember as a child. So, yeah, I suppose it was much more hands-on. And then, I think your generation, I appreciate earlier that you included me in that, but, I just do the podcast to track my gray hair growth. I do think your generation has definitely, looked at work with a different perspective and maybe a healthier perspective. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, not to stereotype, but I mean, your generation is not trying to find a career for the next 40 years that, never has to do. I mean, they're looking at a whole life balance of what else can I do? You know, how much can I work so that I can do the other things that I love? And I think there's some stuff that my generation could learn from that. And, you know, it's interesting because, yeah, today I would say, as a consumer of information like you, that's much more of a push for real estate investors to how can you build a portfolio with as least, I mean, just not taking all your time. I wouldn't say least amount of work, because it's still work. I mean, if you own 100 units, you better be doing some work or someone else is going to mess you up at some point. But I mean, yeah. Right. So one of the reasons I wanted to have you on is because your story hasn't, I mean, like we don't have an ending. We don't have and by the way, I bought everything and now I'm living, you know, I'm recording this in the south of France. So like, let me ask you a couple questions. Like, I mean, are you a goal driven person? Like, do you have a target, something you're pursuing as far as like, a number or a dollar amount or, specific time frames, or are you more of just, kind of throw stuff against the wall and see what sticks, or how do you feel like your personality, you approach things like investing and stuff like that?
Yeah, I definitely don't have a number. I don't have a unit number or a monthly passive income number, because I don't know that I think that all would just, it changes radically. And, you know, depending on your lifestyle, it might really not matter if you have $10,000 or $100,000, you know, if you're living off the grid in a cabin, it doesn't really matter anymore. So, I don't really have any solid numbers like that. I think it's more of the project aspect of it all. And just being able to build things. I really do find myself enjoying trying to, put these puzzles together and make them successful, and just building things that are, you know, not to be like, oh, build something that's bigger than myself, but, you know, just building like a big system that has people involved in it and creates, you know, value, and not in the monetary sense, but creates value for people and purpose for people. So I'm sure, you know, if I'm able to purchase all these properties from this guy who's teaching me a lot of stuff, I'm sure after that, once I get the systems down and feel like I have a solid grip of it, I'm sure I would like to look towards the next project of something to build around it, you know, integrate some vertical systems around all these properties and start an HVAC plumbing company around the properties, or, you know, just build something next. So I think that's kind of what really drives me, is I just like the project aspect of it. Of course, the money is very helpful and allows you to do other projects. So that's kind of, you know, definitely a key of it, but it's not necessarily the reason, the only reason for it. So I guess that's what really kind of drives me.
No. That's good. So fast forward to today, and you have basically your continuing pursuit of people who will be wanting to transition their properties. If I'm not sure how broad you want to speak, so I'll leave that up to you. But you're in a position now where you have an opportunity, perhaps, to buy a portfolio from one of these folks. Correct?
The guy I work for currently is looking to step away from all his properties. He's an elderly gentleman, is getting up there in age, and I know he probably wants to travel more and see some more. And it's hard to do that when he is so hands-on and involved with 98 doors. So yes, I have a deal from him, and we've kind of put together, the portfolio, I guess. So we could dive into that for sure. Like I said, 98 doors. There's a complex that's about 40, 41 or 42 units. I can't recall right now. And then a lot of single family homes that have, you know, 2 to 3 units in them. And then there's a smaller handful of 4-plexes and 6-plexes involved. So that's kind of the scope of the project. And they're kind of scattered all around this downtown area in Lawrence. So they're amazing locations. He started purchasing real estate in 67 was his first purchase. So he's been doing this for an incredibly long time. And that was kind of another thing. This is kind of a sidetrack here, but that was another very helpful thing of being able to find him, is, and something I think that'd be incredibly helpful for other people to do, is find someone who's been in a neighborhood for, you know, 40 plus years, because they know who's bought and who's sold houses up and down the block, and they can tell you who owns what, who's nice, who's mean, who's sick and looking to sell, who's widowed and looking to sell. I mean, these people have a tremendous amount of value in their knowledge of just being in their neighborhood for so many years. So I highly suggest people find someone like that, because it's been incredibly helpful, and you can't, I don't necessarily think you could just find something that easy, like, and valuable on a bigger pockets or, you know, just some forum. So you really have to be involved at that aspect. So back to this portfolio deal that Derek's talking about. It's like I said, 98 doors. I don't know. What do you want to know about it, Derek? I don't know where to go from here. We've been slowly talking about financing.
So what has been, because you have not purchased it, which is kind of why you and I wanted to do this, because I think we both have a desire to bring some documentation of the process, because we don't know how it will end. And my hope is that I can get you back here in a few months, and either you're going to be celebrating or crying, one or the other. It's going to make great ratings. And so that's right.
I'm going to be selling a course.
And so, that's right. I'll be Mr. Cynical about that, but what have you learned? What's been the biggest? So, I mean, how do you buy 98 units? And I know, I mean, I think I can speak that you don't have the down payment sitting in your wallet, and your parents probably aren't going to co-sign for this. So, like, what's going to happen? How do you think, what's your plan? How do you take this thing down?
It is a little tricky of a deal because it has so many different aspects of it. The complex being one. 42 units, that's a pretty big bite to take for a lot of banks. Even the, good handful of 5+ units, multifamilies around the area, a lot of banks have difficulty biting that off as well. So it's, there's a couple places that are totally gutted. And need like full rehabs on them. So there's a lot to figure out in finding where the value is and how exactly to pay everybody and myself at the end of it is kind of what I'm running into right now. So I'll definitely be looking for an investor, and depending on how the deal is set up is, I guess, how much money I would really need. The complex, let's just take the complex by itself. There's commercial, bigger commercial banks, nationwide banks are more interested in something that big. Smaller banks aren't as interested in doing something like that because a lot of them want to keep their loans in house. And that's a whole different talk that I am not comfortable with because I don't know it as much, So I think the key to doing this deal is to try and get into the complex first. It has a lot of value that I could add to it, and a lot of value kind of left on the table from the purchase price. So hopefully I can find an investor, purchase this complex, about 42 units, create a little value with it, take some of the expenses down, some of the utilities. It runs on an old boiler system for the heat and AC. So hopefully get some heat and air units in each individual unit and have the tenants pay their own electric. That would be wonderful. That would cut down, 25+ grand a year on utilities just for that building. And then I could add a couple of units, being that the boiler room is no longer in use. And there's a couple of units offline right now as well. So getting that online and getting those utilities down would create a lot of value that I think if I were to refinance it, I'd be able to pay off the investor and potentially purchase the rest of this portfolio. Luckily, working with a guy like this that is a mentor of mine, he's open to being this flexible in a sale like this because he knows the numbers better than I do, and he knows what works and what won't work. So he fully understands why someone might go about purchasing a deal like this way.
I know you've been thinking about this stuff a lot. So, and to clarify, I mean, he's probably offering it to you at a somewhat discounted price, but he is not by any means giving it to you, nor is he willing to sell or finance it. Like, he wants you to present it up. And when you say investor, you're really, are you wanting partners or, 'cause since I've known you, you've been very anti-partner. So, or it seems like that may be unfair characterization, but maybe it's just me. I don't know. But, what's your thought process on bringing others into that deal and why or why not?
Sure. So I'll start out with the the price and the value section that you mentioned at the beginning. He's valued a lot of these properties off the county assessor value and what the tax is on each of these properties, which is a really interesting way to value the property, in my opinion. And the interesting thing is that every year when the county tries to raise the taxes, you can kind of debate and negotiate your tax assessment with the county. And he does that every single year. So he keeps his taxes incredibly low, which has benefited him. And now it's, you know, kind of benefiting me as well. But the county is off on a couple of the properties, but the issue is the whole portfolio only works with this complex. The complex is a great moneymaker, right, but the rest of the properties don't work really independently. So that's sort of the setup for the value. As far as getting partners involved, yeah, I've always, I guess, being so like sporadic in my thoughts and wanting to move on to the next project and build another project after I get done building one. I don't know, I guess it's always made me feel like if I get to the end of a project, I don't necessarily want to, I don't know. It makes me nervous having other people aboard my ride because I don't want them to say, Zach, where are you going? Why are you leaving? You know, you want to build a heat and air company now, but I thought you're holding our money and we're supposed to be going this way. I guess that might be my deep down fear of getting partners and other people involved. But fortunately with this deal and how I think it might work out is that I would really only need a very small portion of outside money to purchase this complex first, to then, like I said, reevaluate it, refinance it after a seasoning period, be able to pay them off and then be able to sort of burr, if you will, and purchase the rest of the portfolio with the money that I got back from the bank reevaluating it. So yeah, I guess that's why I'm always kind of cautious maybe to use investor money, is that when I get to the end of the line, whenever I've had enough, I don't know if I want to deal with everybody else at the same time.
No, I think that's fair. And there's obviously, you know, plenty of stories of partnerships that have created great podcast stories. I mean, there's, you know, they can be a train wreck.
Yeah, and definitely.
And
yeah,
and I get that. So I mean let me just ask you some questions, because, you know, I think you know me enough to know that I always look at the cup, sure, as I'm trying to be better, but a lot of times I look at the cup as half empty, sure, and there's a hole in the bottom of it.
Sure.
Like, what's your plan? I mean, 98 units is a lot. Like, how do you run that? I mean, I haven't heard you talk about utilizing other people. Anything? Yeah. I mean, I've talked about this a bit before, but do you then become what we talked about earlier with that generation, that this is now your job and now you're working 70 hours a week, but sure, you own 98 units, lucky you. But like, what's your thought process? Or yeah, are you just enough right now in the how do I find the money stage that you're like, I'll figure that out later?
I definitely envision myself not wanting, I'm not trying to purchase a job, you know, we could say that. Mm-hmm. Not trying to purchase a job. Right now, the way he runs it all is very old school. I mean, everything's on paper. Everything is, you know, checks and cash, and it drives me nuts. So, I can see, you know, the cracks, I guess, in the way he runs it. It's worked well for him, and that's how he's wanted to work and live, which is totally cool, but that's not how I'm going to want to work and live and spend my time. So I'm chomping at the bit to implement some property management software. I've already looked at Buildium and have kind of got them going in the background, so I can have some, you know, like a year back worth of tenant information going. So I'm ready to be able to implement some systems, and I think a lot of the tenants are as well. I get asked about every month by, you know, 5 to 10 tenants, when can we pay online? You know, can I pay you on Venmo? I think they're all ready for it as well. So I think right now I'm mainly focused on, you know, funding and how I can complete this well and set myself up for success. And then, you know, once I get that past that hurdle, I think, and really get into the trenches of property managing all these 98 units, really then reassess and figure out exactly how I can work to save time and energy, because a lot of these tenants are pretty high maintenance, being low income. A lot of the tenants that we serve are either, you know, they were probably just homeless. So there's a lot that comes along with that, and a lot of time and effort comes into that. So I don't think I'm going to be trapping myself, but I think I'll definitely be reassessing once I really get, you know, the full workload of everything. So
what are the next steps that you're doing? Like what's the next steps to try to bring this thing into yours?
I was telling Derek before we started this, I got about 8 Excel spreadsheets tabs open right now that I'm afraid to exit out of because all my precious time and data is up there. But I've spoken with 2 banks now. One of them was a smaller local one. They're actually both local, but one of them really only wanted any business to do with the complex is all they wanted to touch. It was interesting meeting with them. And then the other one, again, another small regional bank, they were interested in doing a portfolio loan on everything. They prefer doing the complex first, allowing a seasoning period and then refinancing, like I was discussing earlier, purchasing everything else, doing all that on a 20-year note. So right now I'm really just chatting with the banks, trying to figure out what they would need from me, if this is a deal that they would be open to doing and comfortable doing. I think next week I'll be meeting with a bigger commercial bank to see what their opinions and thoughts are on it as well. Because again, I think this really impacts, you know, a small bank keeping it on the books, I think really impacts how they look at the deal versus maybe a larger bank that might sell that note once they get it. So I think it'll be interesting talking with the larger commercial bank and just hearing them out and seeing how they would attack a deal like this. So that's what I'm doing currently.
Have you sought out potential lenders? I mean, as far as, because you're going to want, when you use the word investor, you're going to want people that maybe could lend you the money that for at least a portion of the down payment, right? Is that kind of what you're thinking?
Right. Yep.
Okay. So have you spoken to them? Like, how do you find those? How do you find those people? Are they on Craigslist too? Or how have you been trying to do that?
Yeah, not too many. You know, if there's a money lender on Craigslist, I suggest you don't use them.
That's probably good advice. Yeah.
You might end up losing a kidney or something.
Yeah, that's
Yeah, so the local real estate meetup that Derek actually runs, I'm going to be presenting this idea to here pretty soon, seeing what everyone thinks, and you know, if it catches someone's ear or interest, then I'm open to talks with that. Like I said, hopefully it's a smaller portion that I'd really need to get going, just to get the complex under my belt, you know, a couple $100,000. So I'm hoping if something doesn't aspire from the real estate group, I know a couple people in the back of my mind that have done real estate for quite a while in town as well, that they're getting up there in age and, you know, aren't as hands-on, that I think would be interested in a deal like this as well. So, again, I've been excelling away and word documenting away, all, you know, typing out pros and cons and why they, you know, might want to give me a chance, and what I could offer them in return. And, so I've been really brainstorming a lot of that stuff and, trying to make it sound professional and sound like, they could trust me with a couple $100,000 essentially. So yeah.
Is there anything kind of that
what I've been working on?
That's great. Is there anything that concerns you about all this? Anything that, I mean, you and I are opposite personalities again. So, but I mean, is there anything that's like any hesitation or concerns or anything, or are you just gung-ho?
Yeah. You know, I really don't have too many hesitations. I'm kind of just ready to get after it and get in there. yeah, I'm ready to get the show on the road here.
Yeah, that's good. That's cool.
The only thing I'm nervous about maybe is the interest rates, if they keep going up, because then it would really impact a deal with a lot of numbers like this. You know, the more numbers, the more the interest rate would impact my cash flow. So
yeah,
that's kind of, I'm apprehensive about that, but
yeah, that's really becoming, you know, that is something that all of us as real estate investors, especially those that didn't start in the 80s, are having to readjust to, is, you know, it's becoming a bigger piece of that underwriting portion of, like, man, if it, and you pretty much, I mean, at the time of us recording this in the fall of 23, I mean, it looks like interest rates are probably not going to go down anytime soon. And I mean, the conventional wisdom is they're going to go up a bit more, and they're still, as realtors like to point out, they're still historically low. So, you know, it could get really, really interesting. I only have one commercial loan, and I guess I have two, and they don't adjust for two more years, but I'm like, this is, that 4.5% is probably not going to exist.
Saving that cash.
Yeah, no, it's going to, cause it will, I mean, our one rental property, our single family home, I mean, it would really cut our cash flow down to double that interest rate. So, that'd be good. So what else? Anything else you want to talk about? Anything else I should have asked you? This has been good.
There's a couple things that I was worried about today. I figured out I'd mention, there's a newer housing development on the, south side of town that they're doing a lot of low income housing in, and they built about, I don't know, 300 some odd units. And it makes me nervous, and it makes the guy I work for nervous as well. Them building so many units, and offering it, you know, as a low income only kind of area. A couple people that live in a couple of our places have already decided to make a move out there, just because they think it's going to be new and better, and they won't be around anybody down here that is in the same situation that they're in. But yeah, it kind of makes me nervous that there's going to be like this rush of people. And, you know, if they just keep building complexes in general, which I know that they do this, you know, I don't know the exact numbers, but I imagine nationwide, there's been a lot more commercial buildings being built in the last couple of years, and a lot more apartments being built in the last couple of years than maybe single family homes. And I don't know, I'm kind of nervous to where that might go. And I always think, when they're propping all those apartment complexes up, I'm like, man, what are those going to look like in 20 years? You know, are they really going to be holding up? And are we just creating like a future slum? You know, that stuff makes me nervous.
Yeah.
So that was on my mind today.
Yeah. I remember a guy, a guy that, I still know, I mean, a guy that's helped me out a lot. He's been in Lawrence, and maybe quite a bit of his adult life. And he talked about how, I think this is true of a lot of towns, you know, someone builds a brand new higher end apartment, everyone kind of moves up, and then that, you know, so then the former high end apartment gets kind of the next rung, and then it just works down. And yeah, right. I mean, unfortunately, there's going to be a need for low income housing. And I do think it does seem like apartments and multifamily are becoming more of a, like, I think there's just some ways there's just a whole lot easier to live in than a single family home. And I don't, again, going back to your generation and speaking of the stereotype, I don't know if a lot of, you know, I worry more sometimes about the single family homes of, like, in 20 years, are they the things nobody wants to buy? You know, a 2,500 square foot single family home, people are like, you're an idiot. I'm going to live in my townhome and not have to worry about stuff. So, or I'm going to live in a smaller home and not care about as much stuff. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've hired a couple of the people who've lived with you or lived in your been your tenants from time to time. I think you'll be fine, but yeah, it is a real challenge. Do you think, if you get it, if you're able to pull this off, and I have every confidence to believe you can, Is your intention to continue to maintain, because is it all low income housing? Like, what percentage is low income of all the properties? Is it 100%?
We probably have like five professional people, I would say. And then there's maybe, 10 to 15 others that are private pay.
Okay.
They might be on disability or something along the lines, but they're private pay. They don't have a voucher or another organization backing them. So
80% is low income housing, probably then, roughly, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And is that the market you're going to want to stay in? I mean, you know, not trying to put you on the spot.
Yeah, I think so. I do like serving that type of client. I think it works well with the properties that he has and locations that he has. And long-term wise, I think it's a good play. Short-term wise, I get a little, again, apprehensive, because this is another thing I was kind of contemplating today was, every year housing comes out with a new list of what the max rent subsidy could be. So, this year for Lawrence, it's like a one bedroom is, I don't know, $925 or $900, something like that. Two bed is, I think it just went up to like $1,100. And in my mind, I started thinking, Lawrence is a insulated area because of the college and, the population here. Or a blueberry in a red state, and it's just insulated. And I kept thinking, how many houses on the market right now could someone buy and turn around and rent it to someone with a voucher? Probably none. Yep. Especially with the economic environment we're in, the interest rates, it's just like this model doesn't work. It just simply doesn't work. The rents don't match up with the value of the homes is. So then I started thinking, well, then who can rent to people that have a voucher is people who either purchased the house 10 years ago for a lower price or have an incredibly great interest rate or have owned them since the 80s and are, starting to get into this phase of their life where they might be aging out of it, like my mentor is. So then I thought, well, if they all start selling and all these houses that have voucher holders in them, they might be displaced from that. Does that bode well for me, short term or long term? How does that affect me? I don't know. I was thinking about that today. It was making me nervous.
Yeah, that's a tough thing, because I think affordable housing, that conversation is going to become more crucial. And if I can say anything after 50 years confidently of my life, is the government can't fix much. Mm-hmm. And so somehow I feel like maybe investors, maybe they'll be, because I know the properties that I know that you're having an opportunity to buy. I guarantee you most investors buy them. Mm-hmm. They're no longer low income housing. And, they're
correct
in some prime locations for student housing and other things. And so yes. I don't think just like some of my previous conversations with others, I don't think you have to be a charity. I don't think there's anything wrong with profit, and I don't think there's anything wrong with owning properties, but I feel like there's some real tough conversations to have. And I feel like if we are blessed enough to own property, then how do we use some of that or all of that with some purpose and figure out how to help people? And, I'm still trying to crack the code of how do you help tenants truly become homeowners? Because it seems like, too, home ownership is not as much of a priority as maybe I think it should be for some people. And they don't understand the amount of wealth it will help build just by buying a house. So that's good. No, I
agree.
We should dive into that deeper more. So when's your target?
Another podcast.
I know that would be great. I'm committed to getting my little studio here done and have people in person, and you and I should hang out. And I'm going to get a
cover for it.
that light switch over there, so people can quit giving me a hard time about not being done.
It's so ugly.
It's so when's your target to get this done? Like, what if you could, like, where do you see yourself? Sure. If phase one is purchasing this big unit, this big complex, when's your hope to kind of have that under your ownership, would you say? How many months, years, days?
Sure. I'm really aiming for, I mean, I hate to say as soon as possible. But, you know, before January 1, I'd love to do it before January 1, maybe even December 1. Again, you know, the Fed's talking about not wanting to slow the interest rate down and keeping it going forward. It makes me nervous that, you know, well, are they going to raise it again in a month and a half? And then I'm, you know, my whole plan is not out the window, but pretty heavily tarnished because the interest rate went up another percent, or, you know, like, so I think the sooner the better for the complex. So I'm really trying to push. And, like I said, I probably saw two banks this week, maybe see another one before the end of the week. So I'm really pushing hard to try and get it done as soon as possible.
Yep. Yeah. You know, one piece of advice I've ignored for a long time that I'm starting to reconsider that I should have listened to was that whole idea of just continuously calling banks. Like, when you know what you want, you just continue calling banks until you find one that says, yeah, this is, we match up with what you want, because they are out there. But it is, and they're very, I mean, you and I make no secret of, or at least I make no secret of my opinion of banks. So they frustrate the heck out of me many, many times. So, and so they've helped me do some stuff, but man, I've paid a price sometimes. So, well, thanks for doing this, Zach. So I'm excited to, we'll follow up in a few months and bring you back on. Like I said, I really wanted to do this because we don't know how it ends. I think that's important for people to hear in a format for their encouragement, that, you know, not every risk you take, I mean, this could die 1,000 different ways, and but it sounds like it could be hugely successful. So thanks for doing this, man. I will I'm going to see you soon, but I will we'll do this again, and maybe we can figure out affordable housing while we're at it too. So
cool. Solve all the world's problems. Well, thanks, Derek. I appreciate your time, man.
Well, that brings us to the end of this episode. I want to thank you again for joining us, for being the part of our conversation with Zachary. I want to thank Zach for coming on. I appreciate his time. I've gathered all the important links and things mentioned from today's show. It'll be included in the handy show notes located below this recording on whatever platform you're listening to us. So make sure to check them out. And if you found any value in our content, I'd love your help in spreading the word, and just ask if you could do us a favor and share this podcast with someone else that you think needs to hear it. Your support means the world to us, and together we believe we can inspire others to achieve greatness. Now, here's an interesting fact I'll leave you with. Nearly 98% of our listeners still haven't subscribed yet. Again, we'd be incredibly grateful if you take a moment, hit the subscribe button on whatever platform you're using. It's a small action, goes a long way in supporting us. If you have any questions or any value I can provide you, please feel free to reach out to me. My contact information is also listed below. Thanks again for tuning in. And guess what? There's a new podcast coming out 3 times every week. So don't just be a passive listener. Embrace the work you were meant to do and make each day truly amazing.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, another episode of The Gentle Art of Crushing It. It was an amazing episode. We know we sure learned a lot, and we hope you did as well. We want to take a second and thank you so much for viewing or listening to this episode. And please just know that we only ask for one favor, and that is to make this life magnificent. Thank you, and have a wonderful day.